Good morning, y'all. So my project I've been working on for the past about 2 years is the evaluation of different Asclepias species for the creation of novel hybrids. Now, for those of you who don't know, Asclepias is usually known commonly as milkweed, and it's a really large genus in and of itself. There are about 108 species in the U.S. alone. It has both ecological and ornamental value, not only for us, you know, from a human standpoint and that it looks good, but it is the host for your monarch butterfly, as well as being an important pollinator species for bees, flies, wasps. I've been stung by everything under the sun working with this plant, so everything loves it. It's extremely resilient in the landscape because, as weed is part of its common name, it is extremely drought resistant and tolerant all at the same time. So with being such a cool, unique plant, you would think a lot of work have been done with this. However, it has a ridiculously complex reproductive structure in that you do not have any loose pollen grains. You have pollen in capsules called pollinia that have to actually be inserted into a stigmatic slit for you to make a successful cross. So, as a result, there has been very little to no work done on this species, and research on the genus itself is extremely limited. So, my objective for the project was, one, to see if hybrids could actually be made, as it hasn't really been documented that you could. Two, if we were successful, how do you germinate any resulting seed from it? Three, evaluate the progeny to see what kind of traits we get from our first cross. And then begin the F2s, because, you know, F2s is when you start seeing the recessive traits, and that's when all the fun stuff happens. But how did I decide to pick the species that I would use, seeing that there are 108 of them? Well, there was a study done in 2015 that looked at basically through AFLPs how genetically similar all of these species were to one another. And the most commonly produced species is Asclepias tuberosa, which comes from that L clade down there at the end. So what we decided to do was just pick about 7 different species, 4 that were closely genetically related, and then 3 or 4 more that weren't quite as close, to see if crosses could be made at all, and if to what point you can make those crosses and still have viable progeny. So how you go about these crosses was also fun. We use Asclepias tuberosa as our maternal because it's the most commonly known and most commonly grown. We know the most about this plant. There were 7 other species that we use as the paternal pollen donors, Ceriaca speciosa, Incarnata purpurescens vesicularis, Hertella, and Curassavica. Try saying that 3 times fast. What we would do is that we would only pollinate the inner 3 or 4 flowers per floret, since they all open at approximately the same time, so you have consistency across your crosses. We bagged those crosses before and after to ensure that there weren't any accidental crosses that I didn't want to occur. And then, assuming we had seed pods, we would harvest them at its natural maturity. So here are all the crosses that were made. Of the species, and again, you can see there's a lot of diversity in color, structure, size. Some of the ones that we chose were very specific. Incarnata and Hertella were both chosen in that they are both the 2 species that appreciate and can tolerate higher moisture soil conditions. Most of the time, you give these guys wet feet in a greenhouse production and they all die. So we were hoping to bring that trait in. From Asclepias vesicularis, we were hoping to bring in branching because milkweed is a weed. Most of the time you get one straight stick and that's about it. So we were hoping to bring those traits in. But before I could even make these crosses, I had to make sure that my crossing method worked. So we started off by making intraspecific crosses with Asclepias tuberosa. Now here comes the fun part. to make these crosses, traditionally using old lit sources. What you have to do is you have to remove that pollinia, which you can see is the little yellow bits on each side of this stigmatic slit. You have to remove it and actually insert it parallel to that stigmatic slit. So the stigmatic slit would open and the pollinia just slits right inside. Using that method, you have a success rate of about 2%. Guys, it takes me about a minute to make one cross. 2% is not going to work for me long term. So came up with the idea, what if I could somehow do a solution-based pollination? So if I grind up the pollinia, put it in a little bit of sucrose to help facilitate the pollinia, it should work, right? No. We tried multiple variations and concentrations, but I had no success. So it was about a Thursday in the greenhouse with making crosses, and the light came through it just the right way, and I realized when you insert the pollinia in the traditional manner, it doesn't have a lot of contact with the reproductive structure that is inside of that entire flower structure. So we found that instead of doing a parallel insertion, if you think of the pollinia like a key that goes into a lock, when you use that method for pollinia for pollination, you go from 2% to about 12%. I can work with 12%. So, 10,000 crosses down the line, I had four species that made successful hybrids: Asclepias purpurascens, Hortella syriaca, and Speciosa. Yes, you can see that I had to make a ridiculously large amount of crosses to get a very small amount of pods, but the fact is, we had success. None of these species have had any recorded success of ever being made ever, so these are like, I've made something new. Happy days. And the reason why we think we saw the success we did with the species that we did is that, remembering back to Asclepias tuberosa being from the clade L, all of the species that made the successful hybrids were from the were closely genetically similar. And then the ones that did not make the crosses were the more distantly genetically similar. So great, I now have seed pods and I have no idea how to germinate them, because in a clade, in a species this large, every species has a different germination protocol. Awesome. So we then thought, okay, what's the most fast, efficient way to get this done? They all share a parent of Asclepias tuberosa, so we're going to use the two most common methods of germination from using that species. So we use either directly seeded, so you harvest the pod, you take out the seed, you directly seed it in, or you go through a cold, wet stratification, which is in damp sand for about 30 days in the fridge. And what was cool about this is that the amount of seeds we were seeing per pod were similar to what you would see from both parents. Like, you average the two, and that's about what we saw. I'm like, haha, hybridization at work. And what we found using our two different germination techniques is that stratification is definitely the way you want to go. You want to avoid direct seeding at all costs. What was also unique and really cool for me from this project, from this little side project, is that you can see Asclepias purpurascens had a germination rate of about 80%. Its parent, if you did it, the germination rate in the precise way, in the absolute best case scenario, you have a germination rate of about 40%. So I've already doubled it based on just one little hybridization. I cannot show you yet what my F1s look like, because, you know, copyright and all that jazz and all the rules. But I can show you basically the color schemes of everything I'm seeing in the F1s thus far. Do keep in mind, I have 5,000 progeny. Only a third of them have bloomed yet. I'm going insane. Help. But this is what we are seeing thus far. And based off the colors of the parents, we're seeing a lot of different genotypes and morphologies that we would not have expected at all. There is increased branching across the board. We've drastically reduced height. We're talking most of these species about 6 feet, 5 feet, and now they're topping out at around 1.5 to 2. And then, of course, the coloration that we're seeing are very unique, very different, and have never been seen before in the straight species or just across the genus in general. Now, granted, if you come up to me after this, I can show you pictures, but I can't actually put it up here. We're also the only ones that are kind of showing the least amount of promise is Asclepias tuberosa or Asclepias speciosa hybrids, and they all seem to take after the paternal. But again, we're hoping to see that in the F2s, those recessive traits will actually begin to show, and then we might see some other differences. But yes, going forward from this point, we have successfully documented that some hybrids can be made that have never been seen before. We now have a successful germination protocol. I'm about a third of the way through the evaluation of the F1 progeny, so I can start to determine inheritance of morphological traits, and then going forward, we're hoping to select the best of the F1s for F2 hybrids so that I can finally see those recessive traits. With that, I would like to thank my advisor, my committee members, my two poor overworked student workers who have made all of these crosses with me down the line, and to all of our sponsors and the University of Georgia. And with that, are there any questions? And yes, today is brought to you by Duncan. Yes, ma'am.
Are you hoping to create some bridge crosses to create the gap between the upper cluster?
So you're asking me. You're not asking my advisor, who would have a completely different answer. My answer is yes. Yes. Yes, because again, there are so many species that are more distantly genetically related. If hybridization gets me closer to where I can make those bridge crosses, yes, I would really, really love to make them. Will I be allowed to? That's a great question. Yes, sir. Surprisingly not, which I was fully expecting. One of the things about making these crosses in for the pods themselves is that when most of us go through germination and seed production in a greenhouse, you're talking about from pollination to harvest, what, a month, two months at most? These guys, when the pods finally develop and open up, I can see them mature in anywhere between 2 to 6 months. So when whatever seed I get from those crosses, they seem to be 100% viable, ready to go really hard to kill. In terms of germination percents per pod, again, all of the species across the board were much higher than were expected, and once they came up and they put down roots, we had absolutely no death, which was also very surprising. Correct. Correct. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we were that the lit had said beforehand going into the process is that if we were going to have failure to make those crosses, it was going to be because it was an incomplete fertilization where the endosperm would have been the one thing fertilized, but not the zygote itself. So it would have been. A lot of the seeds from some of the crosses were empty if you like looked in, and then you actually did the rescuing, which was another side project here, and then yeah, some of them would have what appeared to be a viable seed, and then you open it up and it's just endosperm inside, and I'm free.
Thank you.